or foolishness, with self-torture, or to destroy or injure others, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Text 20. Dātavyam iti yadānam diyate nupakārine deshe kāle ca pātre ca tadānam sattvikam smitam. Translation. Charity given out of duty, without expectation of return, at the proper time and place, and to a worthy person, is considered to be in the mode of goodness. Text 21. Yattu pratyupakarartam palam udishava punaha diyate chapak iklastam tadanam rajasam smitam. Translation. But charity performed with the expectation of some return, or with a desire for fruitive results, or in a grudging mood, is said to be charity in the mode of passion. Text 22. Adesha kali yadanam apatrebhyaschadiyate asatkritam avagyatam tatamasam udahritam. Translation. And charity performed at an impure place, at an improper time, to unworthy persons, or without proper attention and respect, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Text 23. Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdesho Brahmanas Trividas Mitaha Brahmanas Tena Vedas Cha Yagyas Cha Vihita Pura. Translation. From the beginning of creation, the three words Om Tat Sat were used to indicate the supreme absolute truth. These three symbolic representations were used by Brahmanas while chanting the hymns of the Vedas and during sacrifices for the satisfaction of the supreme. Text 24. Tasmad om ityudahritya yagyadana tapakriyaha pravartante vidanukta satatam brahmavadinam. Translation. Therefore, transcendentalists undertaking performances of sacrifice, charity, and penance, in accordance with scriptural regulations, begin always with Om to attain the Supreme. Text 25. Tad ityana bishandhaya palam yagyatapakriyaha dana kriyascha vividha kriyante moksha kangshibihi. Translation. Without desiring fruitive results, one should perform various kinds of sacrifice, penance, and charity with the word tat. The purpose of such transcendental activities is to get free from material entanglement. And finally, text 26 and 27. Sad bhave sadu bhave cha sat ityetat paryujate prashaste karmani tata sat chabda partha yujate yagye tapasidane cha stiti sat iti chochate karma chaiva tad artiyam sat ityeva bidhiyate. Translation. The absolute truth is the objective of devotional sacrifice, and it is indicated by the word sat. The performer of such sacrifice is also called sat, as are all works and sacrifice, penance and charity, which, true to the absolute nature, are performed to please the Supreme Person, O Sariputta.
Gotcha.
Going back to text 16, page 784. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. To make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity in thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature is to become Krishna conscious. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification, and so there is no possibility of the mind's becoming satisfied. The best course is to divert the mind to the Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. One can take advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. The mind should be devoid of duplicity, and one should think of the welfare of all. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. The person in Krishna consciousness observes perfect silence in this sense. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense enjoyment. One should be straightforward in his dealings and thereby purify his existence. All these qualities together constitute austerity and mental activities. Krishna consciousness is the highest form of yoga. And yoga means to control the mind and the senses. Yoga indriya samyama. And therefore, at every step, Krishna is guiding the student how to achieve the perfection in bhakti yoga. And here we see that one of the austerities of the mind, austerities are required for any type of success in any field. For example, even in the field of playing piano, one has to perform the austerity of practicing and sitting at the seat. The others are out playing, and he wants to go out and play, but if he wants to achieve success at piano playing, he has to stay there and sit there, and he has to. But any field, one has to perform some austerity. Similarly, in achieving perfection in life, one has to perform some austerity. In achieving perfection of yoga. So the first point is to be satisfied. This means to learn how to make the mind satisfied. Someone may say, well, if I'm not satisfied, how can I be satisfied? But it's a question of practicing. One has to be practiced in how to be satisfied in any circumstance. One way to do this is to look at the bright side. For example, let's say we're disturbed. Our mind is disturbed. And we're feeling morose. We're feeling that everything is not going the way I want, and I'm not happy, and so many things. So, one has to, first of all, understand, am I the mind, or is the mind something different than myself? That's the first thing. So it requires knowledge. If one has knowledge that I am not the mind, this mind that's disturbed, it's not me that's disturbed, it's the mind. And the mind is simply an instrument of mine. It belongs to me. It's under my care. Therefore, I don't have to submit to the mind just because the mind is disturbed. I can beat the mind if I want. I can take out my shoe, or I can take out a broomstick and I can beat the mind. In fact, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur suggests every morning beat the mind with a broomstick 100 times. And every evening beat the mind with the shoes 100 times. So the mind needs a good beating every day, twice, morning and evening. Because the mind is a rascal. Mind is telling me that, and what is the mind interested in? Sense gratification. The mind keeps telling me, well, the senses want this, and the senses want that. What are you going to do about that? The mind is the king of the senses, so the mind represents the senses. Now, how should one curb down the mind? With intelligence. Intelligence is above the mind. Intelligence should tell the mind, you're speaking nonsense. You're telling me that the senses want this and that, but they don't need that. It's not good for us. It's not going to be beneficial for us as a whole. The senses want to eat more. The tongue wants to eat more. But the belly doesn't need more. The tongue is just acting out of lust. The belly doesn't require more. If we eat more, we won't be able to digest it. Then we'll get sick and we'll go to sleep and so many things. So the intelligence has to say that. The eyes say, now we have to go see something very attractive. The intelligence has to. And the mind says, the eyes are saying this. The mind acts as the representative. Because the eyes, they can't speak to the intelligence. They have to have like a lawyer, an attorney. So the attorney for all the senses is the mind. And so he comes into the court and he says, my dear intelligence, this is what is requested by the eyes and the ears and the nose and the tongue. And the intelligence, he's supposed to make the decision based on where does intelligence come from? It comes from the super soul, the supreme soul, Krishna. He's the source of all intelligence. He says this in Bhagavad Gita, I am the intelligence of all intelligent persons. That intelligence is coming from him. It is one of his energies. Therefore, we should hear from Krishna. And Krishna will guide us with intelligence. Super soul. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matakshmatir gyanam apohanam cha. I am situated in everyone's heart as super soul. From me come remembrance, knowledge, and intelligence. It's all coming from Krishna. Therefore, one can defeat this feeling of dissatisfaction that the mind comes up with knowledge, with intelligence. And that takes practice. One has to, as we hear later on in the verse here, or in the purport, that one should study the Vedas, hear the Vedas. Because by hearing the Vedas, we get intelligence. And another factor is, not only intelligence comes from the Vedas, but satisfaction. When one hears the stories, for example, from Mahabharata or from the Puranas about Krishna, he feels satisfied. And then by feeling satisfied, he's not inclined to go for mundane stories on my computer. Every time I log on, it says I should watch the Hooglies. What's his name? Hooghly? Anyway, some television program supposed to watch. So, because the materialists, what can they do? Their minds are not satisfied. They're not hearing about the activities of the Lord, so they watch what the Hooglies are doing. All nonsense. No one gets any benefit from that. But if we hear about Krishna's activities, then we become purified. We become satisfied. We become saintly just by hearing about Krishna. Shrimvatam svakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantaksto hyabhadrani vidinoti suratsutam. It's so transcendental that it purifies. Krishna's pastimes are none different than Krishna himself. So just as in an opposite way, formerly there was one lady, her name was Mary, and she worked in a restaurant, and she had typhoid. But she didn't have the symptoms of typhoid, but she passed it on, Typhoid Mary. She's very famous. And so everyone who came in that restaurant got typhoid from her. She was just passing it on, just because she had some germs. In a similar way, Krishna consciousness is passed on, in a good way. Anyone who's got the consciousness of Krishna can pass it on to others. And then they also get it without, it's almost imperceptible. One gets the benefit, just as they were getting the bad effect of typhoid without their knowing, without their knowledge. We can get the good effects of Krishna consciousness. We may not even realize how we're advancing. Sometimes one can make advancement without even realizing. And then there was one person I can think of. He was the president of the experimental college at a university, big university. For 4 years in a row, he was the president. That means he organized all the kind of extracurricular courses that they offer. Like we have Com University here, so they also had. And one of the courses that was being offered was a vegetarian cooking course by the Hare Krishna devotees once a week. And so he would go to that because he was a poor student and they would serve out a big feast after the cooking course. And he liked to eat there. It was good food and it was free. So he went every week for 4 years. And he would carefully avoid hearing any of the philosophy. Sometimes they might speak a little. Not so much, but they sometimes did. But he would avoid it. He just went just in time for the eating. And at the end, he graduated, and he thought, okay. And then he went traveling around the world, different places, you know. But wherever he went, he said, I have to go and get some of that prasadam. He had become very attracted to taking prasadam. So he went to Italy, he went to the temple, took prasadam, then he went to Israel, he took the prasadam. And finally he realized that he had become very much attached to Krishna prasadam. And that there was something about this food that wasn't ordinary. He had eaten ordinary food, but it didn't satisfy him. So he had to become a devotee. That was the only way he could deal with. He didn't know that he had become attached to Krishna, but actually taking prasadam, spiritual food, is as much bhakti yoga as anything else, any other aspect of bhakti yoga. Taking prasadam is, Prabhupada once said, we were in Berkeley, and this was in 1971, and Srila Prabhupada, we had just had the Rath Yatra festival. Rath Yatra is the big chariot festival in San Francisco, Golden Gate Park. Berkeley's on the other side of the river. So we were staying in Berkeley, and I was organizing the center at that time. And we had gotten back late the night before from the big festival, and we hadn't had time to organize everything. But anyway, we were told that Srila Prabhupada was going to come and visit the temple later on in the day, something like the afternoon. So we thought, very nice, we'll after breakfast, we'll get everything cleaned up so that when Srila Prabhupada comes, it'll be nice. Anyway, he came over at around 7 o'clock in the morning, or no, 6 o'clock in the morning, some early time, unexpectedly, just showed up along with the other devotees. So he came in to the temple room and we were all shocked, and he was standing there. We all paid obeisances, and then we just stood there looking at him. And then finally one of the ladies realized that we still had his picture on the Vyasa sign. So she took off the picture so that he could sit down. So then he sat down on the Vyasa sign. And so he said, continue with what you were doing. And what we were doing was, we were reciting the translation to the Guru Vastaka prayers. We used to do that every morning. You know, we'd sing the Sangsara Dava. We sing that in the morning. Then we'd say the translation out loud. So we were doing that. And he said, continue where you left off. So finally we figured out we could remember where we were. And then we said, we were reciting the fourth verse. He said, the spiritual master is always offering four kinds of foodstuffs, analyzed as those which are chewed, licked up, drank, and swallowed. Four kinds of prasadam are offered to Krishna. And when the spiritual master sees the devotees are eating Bhagavat prasadam, he is satisfied. And then Prabhupada said, yes, that is the best part. And he said, isn't it? And everyone, you know, said, yes. And he said, yes, prasadam is the best part. He said, isn't it, Karandar? One of the leaders said, isn't it, Karandar? Karandar said, yes. And he said, Pradumna, isn't it the best part? Asked another devotee. He said, yes. He said, yes, it is the best part. So, prasadam is not only yoga, but it's the best part of yoga. Just by taking prasadam, one is associating intimately with Krishna. It is Krishna's special blessed food that we get to eat. So no one should be shy about taking prasadam. Take as much as you can digest. In other words, you can take, if you can eat 10 pounds of prasadam and you can digest it, and that's very good. You can eat. The example is given of Vrikodara. Who knows who the name Vrikodara refers to? Raise your hand if you know. Yes? Bhima, yes. Vrikodara is a name for Bhima. And what does it mean, Vrikodara? Wolf belly. Yes. Vriko means wolf and Udara means belly. So one who eats like a wolf, you know, wolves, they eat a lot. So he's a voracious eater, but he performed Herculean tasks. He had the strength of 10,000 elephants. So Vrikodara, Bhima, could eat so much, but he could also perform Herculean tasks. In the same way, if you can eat great amounts and perform Herculean tasks, that's very good. Otherwise, just eat what you require to keep body and soul together, to keep good health. But prasadam is transcendental. And all these activities are for giving satisfaction to the mind in Krishna consciousness. Let's go on to text 17. This threefold austerity performed with transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits, but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme, is called austerity and goodness. Penance performed out of pride and for the sake of gaining respect, honor, and worship is said to be in the mode of passion. It is neither stable nor permanent. So often we see that people, they perform austerities, but they want to get something back. They want respect. For example, the weightlifters, you know, they go in. It's a great austerity. They're lifting these weights, pumping the irons, but they want people to notice that they've been doing that. It's not that they want no one to know about it. They know what they want people to know. So that means it's a mode of passion. That activity is passionate. I want the result. I want to enjoy. Then worship. He wants to be worshipped. He wants the honor. Okay, text 19. Penance performed out of foolishness, with self-torture, or to destroy or injure others, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Just like someone, he's working very hard to get drugs. So that's austerity. He's maybe stealing to get drugs. It's a great austerity. But he does it for what? To destroy himself. Or he harms others. He's very violent to others. So that's called austerity in the mode of ignorance. Very low mode. Then, text 20, charity given out of duty, without expectation of return, at the proper time and place, and to a worthy person, is considered to be in the mode of goodness. That means he gives charity because it ought to be given, not because he's thinking what I'll get out of it, what will be the result for me. How will I be able to enjoy this giving? He just gives because it ought to be given. And of course, that's the mode of goodness. Charity and the mode of goodness. 21. But charity performed with the expectation of some return, or with a desire for fruitive results, or in a grudging mood, is said to be charity in the mode of passion. He gives grudgingly sometimes, and then afterwards he laments, oh, why did I give that away? I made a mistake. I shouldn't have given so much. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. That's the mode of passion he's giving. Then, charity performed at an impure place, improper time, to unworthy persons, without proper attention and respect, is said to be in the mode of ignorance, just like the beggars on the street. So giving to them, there's no value. It's charity in the mode of ignorance, because they're going to use it for intoxication, something that's not good for them or good for anyone. And at the wrong time, impure place, that's the mode of ignorance. Charity. So charity can be of three types: ignorance, passionate, or goodness. One should try to do everything at least in goodness. Beyond goodness, of course, is transcendental, means everything is done for Krishna. But if one can't do everything for Krishna, at least he should try to come up to the point of doing everything in goodness, in the right way. That will also help society be better, and help him be better. Text 23. From the beginning of creation, the three words Om Tat Sat were used to indicate the Supreme Absolute Truth. These three symbolic representations were used by brahmanas while chanting the hymns of the Vedas and during the sacrifices for the satisfaction of the Supreme. In Sanskrit, all the syllables and the words have meaning, and some of them are especially powerful. For example, the name Krishna. You may say, well, what's so good about the name Krishna? Why couldn't we say, Coca-Cola? What's the difference between Coca-Cola and Krishna? The actual sound vibration of Krishna is special. It's not ordinary. Even if one chants the name of Krishna or Rama without knowing it, they get some benefit. It's like I used to go to the Scoutorama we used to have. So that's probably why I became a devotee, because we used to go and to the Scoutorama all the time, and the Skatorama. So by chanting the name of Rama, we become purified. There was a story about Valmiki Muni. He was a thief, and he was a very horrible person. And he came across Narad Muni. Narad Muni is a great saintly person. So Narad Muni said, I would like to give you some nice mantra to chant. He said, no, I don't want any mantras or anything. No, this is a nice mantra. You'll like it. it's a mantra, it means death. He said, okay, that's nice. So what is it? It's Mara. He said, okay, so chant Mara. So he began chanting Mara, 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 Mara. And if you chant Mara for a while, it becomes Rama. So he became a great pure devotee of Lord Rama, so pure that he actually is the one who wrote the Ramayana. Valmiki, that same former thief, crook, he became the great sage Valmiki and wrote the Ramayana by chanting Mara. So even if one chants without understanding what it means, if he chants the name of the Lord, he'll become purified. That's how powerful the sound vibration is. Text 24. Therefore, transcendentalists undertaking performances of sacrifice, charity, and penance in accordance with scriptural regulations begin always with Om to attain the Supreme. It's like all the Vedic mantras begin with Om Tat Vishnu Paramam Param Sarapas Shanti Surayaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Purnamadak Purnamidam. Om is used at the beginning of all the Vedic mantras because it's such a transcendental sound vibration. A-U-M, A-U-M-A. These three letters put together indicate the absolute truth. It's a transcendental sound vibration. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita of syllables in the Vedic mantras, I'm the syllable Om. Pranava Sarva Vedeshu. Of all the Vedic mantras, I'm the syllable Om. Then, text 25, without desiring fruit results, one should perform various kinds of sacrifice, penance, and charity with the word Tat. The purpose of such transcendental activities is to get free from material entanglement. Tat. Yes, Tat means the absolute truth. And then 26 and 27, the absolute truth is the objective of devotional service and it is indicated by the word Sat. The performer of such sacrifice is also called Sat, as are all works of sacrifice, penance, and charity which, true to the absolute nature, are performed to please the Supreme Person, O Son of Prita. Like sattva means goodness and satatam. Sattva, a devotee is called also sat because it's on the eternal platform. So are there any questions on any of these topics? Yes, the beggar needs to eat, so offer him prasadam. Generally, when you offer them prasadam, they don't want it. Because they're not actually taking the money for food, they're taking the money for something else. Offer them prasadam, giving charity, prasadam is very good. That should be given to everyone. Not only, there's no question of improper place or time. You can give charity to the beggars and to the animals even. You can give prasadam to the animals and they'll be elevated at least to human form in the next life. Maybe higher. Why don't we encourage reading Mahabharata in our society? We do. Bhagavad Gita is from Mahabharata. In fact, Bhagavad Gita is the most important part of the Mahabharata. Stories we also... Yes, they are satisfying and we do hear them. Of course, again, Prabhupada concentrated especially on Bhagavad Gita because without understanding Bhagavad Gita, one may misunderstand Mahabharata also. He may just take them as fairy tales. There are many people who take the Mahabharata as mythology. They don't believe that Bhima had the strength of 10,000 elephants. Do you believe it? You. Why not? Yeah. because you've understood Bhagavad Gita. But persons who don't understand Bhagavad Gita, they might say, how could he have 10,000? How could he be as strong as 10,000 elephants? My goodness, you know. Nobody's that strong. So, one has to become a little purified, and then he can appreciate the Puranas, and especially we like to read the Bhagavad Purana, which is the Krishna stories, Srimad Bhagavatam, because there's so many nice pastimes about Krishna. Question is, if Srila Prabhupada is free from sin, then does he feel pain? Well, whatever a pure devotee feels is in relationship with Krishna. And he feels that whatever he's getting is very nice. It's a mercy from Krishna. For example, let's say you have some serious disease and you go to the doctor and the doctor gives you some bitter medicine. You take it. And while you're taking it, you don't complain too much because you know that this is saving you. And actually, you appreciate if the doctor says, I'm sorry you have to take this bitter medicine. You say, no, that's okay, doctor. Don't worry. Don't feel bad. Because you know he's helping you. In the same way, a devotee knows that Krishna is doing everything for his benefit. And whatever so-called pain he's getting is actually just minimized. Therefore, he doesn't think of it as very serious. And the other point is that pain is generally there for those who identify themselves with the body. Right? They're taking it because they're identifying with the body. But if one doesn't identify with the body, if he identifies with the pure soul, then the soul doesn't feel pain when the body is undergoing some transformation, because he's not the body. If I'm not attached to a car, even if someone takes a sledgehammer and starts smashing it, it doesn't bother me at all. But if I am attached to the car, I'm feeling tremendous pain. What's he doing to my car? Look, he just smashed my car. It's worth $30,000. Right? The pain is because of attachment. He's not the car, and he's not the body. So, if the body is undergoing some deterioration, but if he's not attached to it, then he doesn't feel pain. It's like if someone takes your shirt and rips it off and then takes it on the ground and cuts it into pieces, it doesn't hurt you. It's just your shirt. But if it's a very expensive shirt, then you'll be upset. The question is, some people identify religion, they identify the pleasures as coming from God and the pains coming from the devil. No, we say everything comes from God. And we say that even the pain is also coming from God, and we recognize that. This is Krishna's mercy. It's like we were saying the other day, if you put your hand in fire and you feel pain, that's Krishna's mercy. Otherwise, you burn your hand off. If there was no pain, then you wouldn't know that you just burnt your hand to, a crisp. But when there's pain. So pain is good. It's meant to teach us something. Oh, I'm not supposed to do this. Now we're feeling pain. We're not supposed to be in this material world. That's what we're supposed to learn from this. I'm feeling pain in this material body. I'm not supposed to be in this material body. And I'm not supposed to identify with this body. So actually, it's mercy. Maya has several meanings. Maya means illusion. Maya means energy. And Maya also means mercy. So Maya, when she's giving us pain, that's also her mercy. She's a devotee of Krishna. It's a thankless task, Prabhupada said about Maya. Because she has to keep the living entities in ignorance and she has to punish them. So they hate her But and the devotees also don't like her either because they're afraid that she's going to try to put them in illusion. So it's a thankless task she has. Nobody appreciates Maya. But still she's a great devotee and she's doing that service. Even pain is good for us if we take it in the right way. Just like old age. When people get old, if they're intelligent or if they're a little humble, then they start to realize. I remember we had one, there was one old folks home in Los Angeles that used to bring a big group of 50 elderly citizens. Every year they would come for a program at the temple. And these people were quite old. They were in their 70s and more than that. And they came, and we would give them a wonderful program, you know, prasadam, kirtan, lecture, video, everything, deities. And after they participated in this whole event, they would always ask, you know, can we join? What do you have a program for old people? You know, how can we join also? So, because they were suffering. They weren't happy. They were living in this old folks' home. They knew that they were close to death. But they were a little pious, and they were fortunate to be able to appreciate the beauty of Krishna consciousness. So they were asking, can we also, how can we join? What can we do? Well, it's very good. Old age makes people a little bit more humble. It humbles you. You can't do the things you wanted to do. And you see that no one cares for you anymore. When you're old, nobody interested in you anymore. When you're young, everyone likes you because you have an attractive body and you can do things and you can. But when you're old and you can't walk and you can't hear and you can't talk, so then you start to think, what is this world? I gave everything to this world, and now what have I got? My body's ruined, my mind is shot, nobody cares for me. Why do I want to stay in this place? Why am I so attached to the material way of life when this is what I get after all that? So sometimes they become a little thoughtful. Generally old people are more inclined towards God consciousness. They like to go to church more. And things like that. So even old age is also a blessing coming from God, Krishna. Thank you very much. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.